From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
There's tremendous unity in the Republican Party. We want to see borders. We want to see strong military. We want to see money not wasted all over the world. We don't want to see Russian ships right off the coast of Florida, which is what they are right now. That's unthinkable. We want to see just success for our country. And we don't have success right now.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and that, of course, was President Donald Trump, who was on Capitol Hill today, where he had breakfast with House Republicans and then met with Republican senators this afternoon. We'll talk with Texas Congressman Keith Self about the meeting and get an update on the National Defense Authorization Act that the House is debating on as we speak.
Though I am relieved by today's decision made by the court, no one should be celebrating this decision. This decision should have been an obvious one. And let us not forget, this decision was based not on the merits, but on a lack of standing. We are not yet out of the woods.
That was Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer earlier today commenting on the Supreme Court's decision today on a challenge to the Biden FDA dropping safeguards to the abortion pill mifepristone. The court avoided ruling on the merits by ruling the plaintiffs did not have standing to sue. We'll talk with Aaron Holley, one of the lead attorneys with Alliance Defending Freedom, who brought the case on behalf of the doctors. And the U.S. came very close to a nuclear confrontation with Russia 60 years ago when Russia set up missile sites in Cuba. Yesterday, Russian warships and a nuclear submarine entered Havana Harbor. Sub reportedly has Zircon hypersonic missiles that travel nine times the speed of sound, or close to 7,000 miles per hour, meaning it could reach the states in just seconds. The Biden administration does not seem to be concerned.
We're always constantly going to monitor any foreign vessels operating near U.S. territorial waters. We, of course, take it seriously, but these exercises don't pose a threat to the United States.
That was Deputy Pentagon Press Secretary Sabrina Singh. We'll talk with Nebraska Senator Pete Ricketts a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And I had some sad news for those on the left. It appears the Southern Poverty Law Center is in trouble. The recently unionized leftist anti-Christian organization eliminated a quarter of its staff yesterday. Now, the issue cannot be money, since the organization has nearly $1 billion in offshore accounts. We'll talk with Tyler O'Neill, managing editor of the Daily Signal, later here on Washington Watch. And finally, the Southern Baptist Convention wrapped up its annual meeting yesterday in Indianapolis, Indiana. David Clawson, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at the Family Research Council, was there, and he'll provide us with an overview of the annual meeting. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, it's all archived right there. Lots of resources there for you, as well as on the app, the Stand Firm app. So if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, go to the App Store and download it. As you know, we talk about this often, and you can tell from the news, biblical truth is under attack in our culture and in our nation. We must defend the faith, the Christian faith. And right now, you can take advantage of FRC's $2.5 million challenge match and have twice the impact when you give before June the 30th. So to join us and partner with us in defending the faith, simply text the word DEFEND to 67742. That's the word DEFEND to 67742, and you'll get a link, and you can partner with us to defend the faith. Well, as I mentioned earlier today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that a group of doctors and medical professionals did not have standing to challenge the Food and Drug Administration's removal of safeguards surrounding the use of the abortion drug mifepristone. Now, the FDA has removed nearly every safety standard for women's health and safety from these chemical abortion pills, which now account for more than 60% of abortions. If doctors who have to deal with the consequences of the abortion drug do not have standing, who does? Joining me now to discuss this is Aaron Holley. She's a senior counsel and the vice president of Center for Life and Regulatory Practice at the Alliance Defending Freedom, who represented the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine in this lawsuit. Aaron, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I know this is disappointing, a disappointing result for all of us who advocate for life and the protection of women. Your reaction to the court decision today?
Absolutely. Well, Tony, as you mentioned, it was a very disappointing decision from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did not look at the merits. Instead, they decided the case on a legal technicality, saying our doctors did not have standing. But nothing changes the fact that the FDA's own label says that roughly 1 in 25 women who take mifepristone will end up in the emergency room. These high-risk drugs, that there's nothing that should allow in good medicine to allow young women to take these drugs all alone in their dorm rooms without ever having seen a doctor. And the FDA's decisions were as wrong yesterday as they are today, or today as they are yesterday. But we are encouraged, as you mentioned, that the Supreme Court did not decide the merits. There are three states that have intervened below. Those states will have an opportunity, we hope, to present the merits that the court did not consider.
So, Aaron, let me ask you this question. If these medical professionals and doctors who have to deal with the consequences of this abortion drug, I mean, if they don't have standing, who does?
No, that's a really good question. And at oral argument, the United States actually took the position that no one has standing. The United States Solicitor General was pressed by Justice Alito, and she said, our doctors who treat these women on a routine basis, who suffer the complications from taking abortion drugs, don't have standing. She said doctors who prescribe mifepristone don't have standing. She said a woman who's injured by mifepristone doesn't have standing. And she suggested that the states don't have standing. Thankfully, the Supreme Court did not go that far for good reason. It would be an astonishing principle of administrative law if the decision that affects about 650,000 women every year involves a high-risk drug is completely unreviewable by the federal courts. Instead, what the federal court did, and I think this is really important for viewers to understand, is they said that the pro-life doctors in this case are protected by federal conscience protections, and that's why they can't sue. Now, these federal conscience protections did not exist, according to the federal government, below. The government told the federal courts that these protections did not apply in emergency situations. Then they got to the Supreme Court and they told the Supreme Court the exact opposite. And that's why the Supreme Court didn't find standing where every other court to address the issue had. In fact, the Supreme Court was really clear that doctors do have standing to raise conscience rights, but the federal conscience protections in federal law are broad and absolutely protect medical professionals from performing or participating in abortions, even in emergency situations. Of course, those federal conscience protections wouldn't apply per se to states. So those states may have an avenue forward.
That's interesting because this administration, like the Obama administration, whittling away at those conscience protections. So with this statement before the Supreme Court, does that somehow bolster now these protections that are out there? Can doctors appeal to this argument before the court as being a validation of those protections?
Absolutely, Tony. At the oral argument, the Solicitor General was crystal clear that these protections apply in emergencies in every setting. And the Supreme Court actually said, and I'm quoting here, that federal law fully protects doctors against being required to provide abortions or other medical treatment against their consciences. And as you identified, that's a huge win for religious liberty and freedom of conscience because the Biden administration has been continually cutting back on those conscience protections. But because of the lawsuit brought by AHM, the government really was forced to concede that those conscience protections exist and they are robust.
Well, that's actually a silver lining here in part coming out of this case. So that's some good news. But I also want to go back to what you said a moment ago, Aaron Holley, that this is not the end of the story. There are other states, I believe Missouri is one of the states, Idaho is one of those states, that has a separate lawsuit regarding the FDA and the abortion drug. Can you give us an update on what is different about their case and where it stands?
Absolutely. So those three states, Missouri, Idaho, and Kansas, actually intervened in the AHM lawsuit. So they are part of the case back at the district court. And those proceedings will go forward. Presumably, the Department of Justice will file a motion to dismiss the states, also on standing grounds. But the states have very different standing arguments than our doctors. And so we'll expect, we'd expect and hope the states will raise those standing arguments. And we hope and expect that the federal courts will get to actually look at the merits of FDA's decision. And especially, Tony, when you look at the 2021 removal of that last remaining in-person visit, the FDA's data itself, the FDA could not say that women would be safe without that in-person visit, and yet they still removed that safeguard. So we are hoping, again, that the courts do have an opportunity to look into those merits. The Supreme Court didn't, based on a legal technicality. But as you said, that has the silver lining of ensuring that there are robust conscience protections throughout the country.
So quickly, Aaron, what would be the difference for the states in terms of standing compared to these doctors that you represented before the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. Well, the states have a more traditional economic harm, and we don't represent the states, so I'll let them speak for themselves. But women who come to the emergency rooms, again, roughly 1 in 25 do so after taking mifepristone, and some of those women end up in hospitals that receive state funding, and that the state is injured by those additional medical expenses due to harm from the abortion drugs. This is really a quintessential economic injury that the Supreme Court has recognized in many cases. So the state will have that economic injury in addition to their own sovereign injury and injuries. Many states have passed laws protecting life, and yet those abortion drugs are being mailed across state lines. This is a direct injury to state sovereignty. So I'd expect the states to raise these and other standing arguments.
So bottom line, this is far from over.
Absolutely.
Aaron Holley, always great to see you. Thank you for the great work that you do, and always appreciate you coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, another reason, pray. Pray, vote, stand. This is far from over. I know the headlines try to make this, that this is a devastating blow. Setback. Certainly, we would have liked to have seen the court take this and put an end to it, because many, many women are going to be put at risk because of the policies or the lack thereof of the Biden administration when it comes to the abortion drugs. By the way, this is an issue that's going to be up in the Republican Party platform that's coming up. I've been talking about that. I'll be on the platform in Milwaukee, and help us defend life on every front. And so if you'll join with me by contacting state Republican Party leaders saying defend life in the party platform, simply text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742, and communicate with state party leaders that they need to defend life. Make it provide a contrast between the two parties. Make it very clear. All right, after the break, Family Research Council's David Clawson attended the Southern Baptist Annual Convention in Indianapolis this week, and he joins me after the break to give us an overview of what took place. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
This is Washington Watch, and I'm Tony Perkins. The website's Tony Perkins as well. And help us defend life. Text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742. So you can contact state party leaders, Republican leaders across the country, to tell them to stand firm for life. Extremely important as we shape the policy here in our nation's capital as it pertains to the sanctity of life and so much more. Well, speaking of life, the Southern Baptist Convention, the country's largest denomination of Protestant Christians, held its annual meeting this week in Indianapolis with a focus on a number of issues that drew the attention of the legacy media. Now, those issues included the position on IVF, in vitro fertilization, which, by the way, as we talked about at the top of the program, the Senate turning back a measure that really was not about in vitro fertilization, it's about so much more. But we'll talk about that, as well as whether or not member churches, to allow member churches into the convention that allow women pastors. That was something that was dealt with at the convention as well. And while the coverage from the legacy media is rife with misinformation, Family Research Council's David Clawson, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview, was there at the annual meeting this week, and he joins me now with his takeaways. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
So would it be safe to say that the media didn't get it right?
My goodness, Tony, we know that. You know, we hear stories about the mainstream legacy media. If I weren't there in the room in Indianapolis and I just looked at the major headlines, Tony, I would be very discouraged about the state of the Southern Baptist Convention, a denomination I've been a part of my entire life. Having been in the room, I got to tell you, Tony, I'm very encouraged for almost everything that took place in Indianapolis, whether it's approving record numbers of budgets to send international missionaries to plant churches. We commissioned 83 new missionaries to send all over the world. So most of what happened in Indianapolis was God-honoring and really exciting.
A really, really good important point, because I see it a lot here in Washington, D.C. when I'm in a meeting on the Hill or something, then I come back and I read about it or I see an article about it, and it's like, is that the same meeting? totally distorted, because you're getting it through the lens of someone's worldview. And oftentimes these reporters are hostile toward Bible-believing Christians. And so that's going to come out in their reporting. That's why the Washington Stand, Washington Watch, is so important. And folks, that's why you need to have the Stand Firm app so that you can get news and information from a biblical perspective. So download that Stand Firm app. So two issues before we run out of time I want to hit on. One, IVF, a resolution. Talk about that.
Yeah, so every year when Southern Baptists get together and pastors, and they're called messengers when they're there at the annual meeting, we debate and pass resolutions. I think it's important to notice, you know, the Southern Baptist Convention is not a hierarchy. We don't have a, you know, a pope in Nashville or something. But we do pass resolutions that are non-binding, but they do give the sense kind of where Southern Baptists stand on a host of issues. And they did pass for the first time in over 160 years of the Southern Baptist Convention a statement on IVF. And I actually have it right here. I think what's interesting, because if you looked at the media reports, you know, you'll see Southern Baptist oppose IVF or Southern Baptist move to ban IVF. Let me read you what it actually says, just a couple of lines. Here's what it says. Resolved that the messengers of the Southern Baptist Convention call on Southern Baptist to reaffirm the unconditional value and right to life of every human being, including those in an embryonic stage, and to only utilize reproductive technologies consistent with that affirmation, especially in the number of embryos generated in the IVF process. And then it goes on to call on government to restrain from actions that would be injurious to human life. And so it doesn't actually say that we should oppose or ban IVF.
It just says be ethical.
We need to be ethical and think about the moral considerations. And I think that's a great encouragement for all of us to think biblically and ethically about all these issues.
And that has been our concern with the reaction to the Alabama Supreme Court case that people have run with and said they're trying to ban IVF. They did not. They just recognized the personhood of an embryo, of an unborn child, the potential that is there. And so we're saying you should be careful in how you do that, because people don't realize that the IVF, that is an industry that is unregulated in many ways, and produces these excess embryos that are then either destroyed or frozen. That's an ethical issue, and that's what this is dealing with.
It is. And in the resolution, it calls on Southern Baptists to consider adopting these frozen embryos.
Which is something that happened a number of years ago. There was a big push for snowflake babies.
Yes.
Where these embryos were adopted.
Yeah. And so, again, I think it's a wonderful statement. It affirms the value of all life, regardless of the circumstances of conception. And so I think this is a great kind of thing for Southern Baptists to look at and say, hey, this is an issue that our culture is talking about. We as
that's
Southern Baptists, and we as Christians want to think about it.
That's the way the pulpit should be. It should be addressing the issues to help people understand, not tell them what to think, but how to think through these issues. That's the role of a Bible-preaching pastor and a denomination. All right, we're going to run out of time here, but I'm going to go to the other really hot-button issue that was distorted in many ways by the media. That was the issue of women pastors. Now, this is not the first time this has come up at the convention. What happened there?
Yeah, in short, Tony, you know, Southern Baptists churches have to be in friendly cooperation and have to adhere to the Baptist faith and message. That's kind of our statement of faith, which excludes kind of the egalitarian model. Southern Baptist churches do not allow women to have the office of pastor. And so that's in our statement of faith. We've made moves to remove churches that persist in having women pastors.
But does not mean they cannot be in the ministry.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think that was important. You know, Southern Baptist churches have women who lead children's ministries and direct music and do wonderful things that if they didn't do it, these churches would just – we wouldn't be able to do the ministry that we do. They wanted to make a move, though, to put it in the SBC Constitution that says the office of pastor is reserved for men qualified by Scripture. 61% of messengers approved that, so it came short by about 4%, Tony. And a lot of people were saying, well, this is actually unnecessary, because actually earlier in the day, we removed a church with a 91% vote for having a woman pastor. And so the Southern Baptist Convention is a complementarian denomination. My perspective, I wish it would have made it more clear. It would have been less confusing had this amendment passed. But I left Indianapolis believing that 99.9% of Southern Baptists are complementarian in their theology.
And, of course, there was a lot of focus, as you said at the beginning, about equipping the church, the missionaries, to do the work of the gospel ministry.
Yeah, we commissioned 83 missionaries who have given their lives to the foreign field, Tony. Praise God for that.
All right, David Clawson, always great to talk with you. Thanks for the update.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Folks, coming up next, mass layoffs at the Southern Impoverished Law Center. What happened? Did you see that tear? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll talk about it after the break. Tyler O'Neill joins me. Don't go away.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, according to a union representing workers at the Southern Poverty Law Center, or the Southern Impoverished Law Center, which more accurately describes them, the organization gutted its staff yesterday, laying off 60 workers and eliminating or drastically reducing multiple woke programs. Now, these layoffs came after the nonprofit watchdog group, Charity Watch, recently gave the SPLC an F for hoarding donations, saying it may not use a donation for more than 7 years due to the cash that it's hoarding. Now, the question is this in response to people waking up to the truth about the SPLC, or could the SPLC be purging their ranks of union members? Joining me now to discuss this, Tyler O'Neill, who first reported this story. He is the managing editor of the Daily Signal and the author of the book Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tyler, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I know few people that know more about the Southern Poverty Law Center than you. You've been tracking them for quite some time. You broke this story. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, so the SPLC apparently told a whole bunch of its members that it was laying them off, a whole bunch of its workers, and it seems particularly to have targeted union members. The head of the union chair, realized that that person will be leaving his job. The five union leaders will also be losing their jobs, as well as a whole host of other union members. And Hannah Guy, who was one of the reporters with the SPLC, she posted on Twitter a very interesting statement saying this clearly isn't for lack of money. It's not like the SPLC is hurting for cash. So the real question is, are they cracking down on the union? And it's really weird that the SPLC has a union. They're a nonprofit organization where you would think people work there because they believe in the mission, not because they're out to make a buck. But apparently it was enough for them to unionize, and partially right, because the left is very focused on unions these days, apparently not focused on unions enough to work with the current union leadership. So this could be an effort to oust them.
You know, the SPLC has a union like people wear masks today. They don't need them, but it's virtue signaling to the left. And so that's what that's been my interpretation of the union at the SPLC for the last 2 years since they've had it. But let's go back to just a moment about the tweet that you made reference to, that this is not a shortage of cash. Again, you've reported on this. How much money is the SPLC sitting on?
So we don't know the current figures because they haven't filed their 990 yet. But for 2022, they had $731 million in their endowment. That's almost $750 million. So as Charity Watch noted, they could run their programs for 7 years without raising a single cent. And all that cash they get by demonizing mainstream conservative and Christian organizations like, I don't know, the Family Research Council, also Alliance Defending Freedom. And recently they put Gays Against Groomers, which is an openly gay organization, as the name suggests, on the hate map, putting them in the same designation as ADF and FRC as a quote-unquote anti-LGBTQ plus hate group.
So how many left organizations have they identified as hate groups?
Yeah, I think there might be like one or two. They do have the Nation of Islam, which is kind of on the left. But most of the time, there's pretty much none. I was reading through. So last week, they released their annual Year in Hate and Extremism report. And they had this thing where they condemned conservatives for twisting what they acknowledged was a legitimate issue, namely anti-Semitism on college campuses. But besides noting that it was a legitimate issue, the SPLC didn't say anything about it. Instead, they spent all their time suggesting that any criticism of George Soros is anti-Semitism and saying that, oh, you can't, quote, you can't work with Moms for Liberty and you can't condemn anti-Semitism on college campuses because Moms for Liberty shared, you know, one of their chapters quoted Hitler, don't you know? Well, yeah, if you look at why they quoted Hitler, it was about how the left is taking over our cultural institutions, which just puts the nail on the head that the SPLC is using its history to try to demonize and silence anyone who opposes woke orthodoxy, which has taken over our institutions.
So it's more than evident that they are not neutral on these issues. They are what I call the junkyard dog for the left. But the Biden administration is working closely with them.
Really closely with them. I mean, it's shocking to me. They've had their leadership and staff have, I believe, 18 meetings with the White House. The FBI notoriously cited them in that Richmond memo on radical traditional Catholic hate groups. But then they've also been having meetings with leadership at the DOJ and the Department of Education. And one of the stories that I broke earlier this year was that Margaret Wang, the president of the SPLC, bragged that many different agencies in the Biden White House reached out to them specifically for advice on combating the domestic terror threat, which is really terrifying considering that not only was one of their lawyers arrested for domestic terrorism last year, but their hate map inspired a domestic terror attack.
Right. On us.
12 years ago.
Yeah, on us. All right, Tyler, always great reporting and great to see you. We'll encourage people to take a look at your article. Thanks so much for joining us.
One last thing.
We're up against a break.
Okay.
I'm out of time. We'll get it next time,
though.
Thanks so much, Tyler. Tyler O'Neill, you can check out his article to go to TonyPerkins.com. Next, Pete Ricketts and Keith Self from Congress joins us. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at The Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, to help us take that stand for life on the Republican Party platform, simply text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742. Our word for today comes from 2 Samuel chapter 23. Thus says David, the son of Jesse, the Spirit of the Lord spoke by me, and his word was on my tongue. The God of Israel said, the Rock of Israel spoke to me. He who rules over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God. So how can the one who rules over others be just, which God expects of them? It's right here. It says, leaders are to rule in the fear of God, knowing that they will give an account to God. Now, politicians can spin and, with the aid of the media, hide a lot from voters. But God sees it. As William Wilberforce, a Christ-following member of the British Parliament who became the leader of the effort to abolish slavery, wrote in 1786, that he understood he would give an account of his political conduct at the judgment seat of Christ. He who rules must rule under the fear of God. To join us in our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. A fleet of Russian warships reached Cuban waters this week, sparking memories of the Cuban Missile Crisis just days after the Biden administration approved Ukrainian forces using U.S. weaponry to strike targets in Russia. Among the flotilla is a nuclear-powered submarine, though Russian officials have denied that the submarine is carrying nuclear weapons. Now, what does this say about the U.S. standing on the international stage with Russian warships operating within miles of U.S. territorial waters? Joining me now to discuss this and much more, Senator Pete Ricketts from Nebraska. He serves on three Senate committees, including the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Ricketts, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tony, for having me on. I appreciate it.
So Russian vessels offshore, curiously timed as the G7 summit takes place. Is this a clear reaction by Vladimir Putin to the green light from the Biden administration to give Ukraine the ability to use U.S. weapons to attack Russia?
I actually think it's a bigger picture of Biden just in general projecting weakness on the world stage, starting with the disastrous pullout of Afghanistan, but leading to all the events we've seen, including the attack on Israel October 7th. You know, we have not had a Russian fleet doing military exercises in this hemisphere since 2008 when Obama was president. And that was by Venezuela, not off the coast of Florida, you know, 90 miles away. So this is something that is really a result of Biden just being weak and Putin understanding that he can push the United States around because we've got such a weak president.
Now, this particular nuclear submarine, now the Russians are downplaying that this poses a threat, but normally this is armed with a hypersonic missile that can travel 9 times the speed of sound, basically 7,000 miles per hour. That makes it just seconds from hitting the U.S. We almost came to a nuclear confrontation back in the 60s over this. I mean, what's changed since then other than weak leadership?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just part of when we project weakness, our adversaries, people that are dictators like Putin, are going to take advantage of it and really try to intimidate us. And frankly, unfortunately, with the Biden administration's appeasement first policies, they get away with it, right? These dictators around the world can think they can push us around. And with Biden, they've been successful in being able to do it. What we need is a president like President Trump, who is going to stand up and let dictators know that if they step out of line, there's going to be severe consequences. These dictators were afraid of President Trump when he was president, and we need to bring him back so that we can, again, regain our standing on the world stage. And frankly, one of the things everybody should ask themselves right now, do you feel like America and our allies are safer today, 3 years after Joe Biden or 3.5 years after Joe Biden's been in office? And I don't think there's anybody who can, with a straight face, say, yeah, we're safer today under Joe Biden, because it's simply not true.
Senator Ricketts, you serve on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Foreign Affairs Committee. Should we be concerned as Americans about this? And if so, why?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, again, this is part of an overall strategy where our adversaries in, you know, Russia, People's Republic of China, Iran, North Korea, they're pushing the edge of the envelope and really destabilizing the world, but also putting us at risk. You mentioned how fast these hypersonic missiles can travel. The Russians say there's no nuclear weapons on this. I don't know why anybody would believe what the Russians are saying. Certainly, you know, with, hey, trying to put missiles in Cuba back in the 1960s, they lied about that then, too. So this is something where we're putting ourselves at risk by allowing the Russian military in this hemisphere. And so we need a president who's going to push back on that and end this practice. And that president, sadly, is not Joe Biden, because he's the one that is allowing this to happen.
What steps could a president determined to protect America and American interests do at this point?
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is really start enforcing our sanctions and making sure that they're having a bite on our adversaries. You know, for example, one of the things that the Biden administration has done is loosened up the sanctions on Iran to allow them to get a bunch of oil money. Frankly, Putin's benefiting from the same thing. We're allowing people to buy oil from Russia. President Trump ended China buying oil from Iran. And that's what we have to do, is we have to go to our allies and just, and even our adversaries, and say, hey, if you're buying oil from Russia, if you're buying oil from Iran, we're going to shut that down. We need to take a strong stance with this stuff. Again, Iran was almost broke under President Trump. They had almost no foreign reserves left. They weren't able to fund the Hezbollah or the Hamas or the Houthis or anybody like that. And under Biden, we've loosened all that up, so they've had, you know, billions of dollars going to them, and that's how they can afford to fund things like the attack on October 7th on Israel. And it, frankly, it's the same thing with Putin. We got to shut this down. We can't allow them to get these oil revenues. We've got to support our allies when they're trying to get off of Russian energy. But again, the Biden administration has shut down, the LNG, our liquid natural gas exports to Europe at a time when we're trying to get them to stop using Russian gas. The policies of the Biden administration just make us weaker.
Right. So we need these policies backed by a strong military, because if we do both, we won't have to use a strong military. The best deterrent. I want to switch gears, Senator Ricketts. For the first time in quite some time, former President Donald Trump was on Capitol Hill, met this morning with House members and this afternoon with Senate Republicans. The theme of the meeting appeared to be unity. Tell us about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a great meeting. It was very unifying. The president came in and said, hey, I support you 1,000%. We need Republicans ready to go when he gets elected president to start enacting his agenda right away. The things he talked about doing were fighting inflation and specifically around energy policy, making sure that we were developing our energy resources. It's a national security issue. It would help bring down energy prices. It would help bring down inflation by doing so. That was a big deal. We talked about having a strong Navy. You know, you mentioned having a strong military. Obviously, President Trump believed in that, did it when he was president. He'll do it again. This administration, the Biden administration, is actually reducing the size of our Navy at a time when Russian warships are in our hemisphere. And to your point, we've got to have a strong military. My colleague Roger Wicker wrote an op-ed that was really around how we have to invest to have a stronger Navy and a stronger military in general. But you know, the president also talked about the things he wanted to do to secure the border. He talked about, which is a great idea, I think, which is tips for hourly workers, making those tax-free. The Biden administration has made the burden of reporting taxes on tips harder. So if you got your server at a restaurant, it's actually harder for that person. More paperwork to be able to report their tips. President Trump's like, well, why don't we just make those tips tax-free? I think that's a fantastic idea. It would help those families that are on, you know, relying on those hourly wages to be able to cope with this high inflation that Biden created.
Yeah.
So it really was a great meeting. I can't say enough good things about the president coming in and how upbeat he was. You know, we're feeling very, very good about his opportunity to be reelected. And when he gets reelected, we need to move fast to enact his agenda.
Yeah, absolutely, to correct all that has been done over the last 4 years. Senator, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on.
All right, Senator Pete Ricketts of Nebraska. Well, the president also met with House Republicans, that taking place this morning, as he had breakfast with members of the House. And joining us now to talk about that and the National Defense Authorization Act that is on the House floor even as we speak, Congressman Keith Self of Texas. He serves on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs and the House Veterans Affairs Committee. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of the Lone Star State. Congressman Self, welcome back to the program.
Good to see you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's good to see you back on the ground here in the United States. Last time we talked, you were about to jump out of a plane over in Normandy.
It was a fabulous jump. The weather was great. The scenery looking directly at Mont Saint-Michel was wonderful. The ground was soft because they'd had 30 days of rain prior to us getting there. Perfect jump, Tony. It was wonderful.
Well, the soft ground is always good. Let's talk about your meeting this morning with the president as President Trump met with House members this morning. What took place in that meeting?
Well, I will tell you, President Trump was much more upbeat than he was the last time I saw him, which was in the New York courtroom. And frankly, Tony, he's raised a ton of money since the end of that court case, a ton of money. But I will tell you, he was very upbeat. He's very aggressive going forward. He's got a plan to take the White House. He's going to help us take the larger majority in the House and the Senate. So he's very upbeat, very aggressive. And I will tell you, it was wonderful hearing his plans for those things that President Joe Biden has basically destroyed. The 4 years under Trump is like night and day between the 3 years under Joe Biden. The border, the open border, the 10 million plus people coming across it, the economy that is crushing the American middle class. You just talked about tips with the senator. And frankly, the foreign policy area where we see wars spreading around the world as they see the weakness of America. So it was very encouraging to see an upbeat, engaged, dynamic President Trump this morning at breakfast.
Now, I know that with the Senate, he touched on this issue. I don't know if he did with the House members, but the fact that we have Russian warships just off the American coast down in Cuba. Did he touch on that with House members?
Well, I'm not going to get into specifics because it was a Republican conference. It wasn't a public meeting. But I will tell you, yes, we touched on the subject. And I think it's concerning because we need to reestablish the Monroe Doctrine that says that the United States, as the power in the Western Hemisphere, we will guard the Western Hemisphere, which includes not only the Russian warships in the Caribbean, but also China initiatives in South America. So very important foreign policy agenda that I will go back to President Biden All of this is because of the weakness of the Biden administration. We just need to realize that.
And we have to realize that it's very dangerous. Just because something may not be happening this moment, with each passing day, we're becoming weaker when it comes to our national security. Let's talk national security. National Defense Authorization Act. Over 1,300 amendments were offered. About 350-plus were ruled germane. You're working your way through those right now. Give us an update.
Well, I will go to the floor of the House, which is behind me, as soon as I finish this interview, Tony. And I will be talking about naming a ship after a wonderful hero, a three-star Marine general. I will then talk about, later in the day, I will talk about my chaplain's amendment, because chaplains were punished by the U.S. military for a matter of conscience when they refused to take the COVID vaccine. I want the military to correct their records because they were harmed in their career in multiple ways. And I want the military to correct that, because matters of conscience for all Americans, not just our chaplains, should be sacrosanct. It's exactly one of the elements of the First Amendment, and we're going to get back to that, Tony.
Are you optimistic? That's Amendment 341, I believe. Are you optimistic you're going to be able to get that onto the NDA this year?
I do, for both amendments. They're both in an en bloc. And so I am cautiously optimistic always, because I don't know what will happen on the floor. But I'm cautiously optimistic, yes, that both of my amendments will be made, will successfully pass the floor of the House. Yes.
And Congressman Self, there's a number of other amendments dealing with the woke agenda that the Biden administration has forced onto the military. You know, we know about the military's recruitment troubles. Do you see these amendments as a method to improve that crisis and get more young men and women to join the military?
Yes, absolutely. The almost 20% increase in junior enlisted pay, I think, will be something that will help there. But frankly, we need to return the military to an idea of challenge, something greater than yourself, something that is worthy of being a part of. That's most important in our military. And yes, that's exactly what we want this NDAA to do.
All right. How can what's the timing right now? When does it look like a final vote is going to take place on the NDAA? Tomorrow?
Final vote will be tomorrow. So you still have time to influence your particular representative. And I am encouraged that I don't see any of what for me would be red lines in the NDAA this year. So I am confident that I will be able to vote for a bill that is much more conservative, that returns our military to the trajectory that needs to be on.
All right. Congressman Keith Self, thanks so much for taking time to join us off the House floor. Go in there and get your amendments passed.
Yes, Tony, thank you so much.
All right. Always great to see you. Congressman Keith Self of Texas. So you have time to contact your members of Congress regarding this, but it is on track to have a number of good amendments to make the NDAA, which is an annual must-pass piece of legislation, actually a good piece of legislation dealing with a number of the woke issues that the Biden administration has forced on the military. The military has long been used by the left as a laboratory of social experimentation, because if you can push it onto the military, then you can push it out more broadly to the rest of society. So pray, vote, stand. Pray for our nation. Pray for our leaders. Vote for those who will uphold truth, morality, constitutional principles. And then you and I must stand for those principles regardless. All right. Be sure and help us on the party platform, the life issues. Text life to 67742 to help us defend that. All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.